In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Jeffrey Wright and Company.
Tell your story.
Live on Memphis's sports station, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM ESPN, 680 AM. But if you're away from the dial and you want to stay up to date with all the programming here at 92.9, you can do so by downloading the Odyssey app. It's free to download. It's free to listen. Just go into your app store and download today. You'll keep up with all of the content here at 92.9 FM ESPN, as well as all of the other content throughout the Odyssey catalog. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Glad that he, of course, is with us. My company this week is the MC for all fun and games here in Memphis. Also the host of 901 Wrestling. His website, CerritoEntertainment.com. On Twitter, at Cerrito. Kevin, good day, sir.
Greetings. It is not the college football Christmas Eve that it should be. Really, it's like you get to tomorrow is Christmas Eve, I guess, because you get to open some presents tomorrow. You get a, you can open a few, but the real day is next week. You got a Christmas Eve if it was a week before.
So my mom used to trap us by thinking, like, you get to open one present. And then I started noticing, I don't know, maybe I was about 12 or 13. I was like, Mom, every year that you tell us we get to open the one present, it's literally just matching pajamas so you can take a picture. And she got really mad at me because I figured out like what the trick was.
Right.
So I didn't get to open anything good.
Although typically pajamas. So we've got pajamas we're going to be opening up. Is it better than pajamas? But because it's not. It should feel
that's
like.
That's a great question.
There should.
I'm not a pajama guy.
It's
better than pajamas.
It's better than pajamas, I think. Maybe, right? I don't know.
I can't. Maybe this is tying into kind of how I'm feeling. Like, I either want week zero to be a thing or just do away with it. Like,
We've been talking this. I'm like, either this, yeah, do away with it and make opening weekend a thing, but there needs to be definitely Saturday and Sunday, big time football happening. It falls on Labor Day, gives you even more flexibility, but
I don't like how we've diminished opening days throughout sports now. And like always, it's a cash grab.
It's an ease into it. It's like, it's a cold swimming pool.
Well, like to me, it's like baseball opening day used to be a thing. Well, like now we're sending the Dodgers over to Korea a week before the season starts to play at 6 a.m. It's like, all right, like just go one way or the other. I think this might tie in, though, to your point about whether or not it's Christmas Eve, opening one present. I'm a purist. You open your birthday presents on your birthday. You open your Christmas presents on Christmas Day. I think that's kind of why I'm like, I want to open my presents or it's don't give me presents. And this feels like you're getting kind of one decent present and then you're getting a couple other, like, socks. Although my mom's been giving me Bombas socks, shout out, no free ads, but Bombas socks at every Christmas.
Oh,
those
really?
Things are incredible. Like, I've never, they are not, it's the classic.
You just made the Christmas list.
It's the classic, perfect gift to give someone because no one wants to pay what Bombas socks cost. But if someone gives it to you, you're like, these are awesome. But you don't want to, like, actually fork over the money. Like, I'm someone who just go buy socks at Costco. But I digress. We've got some big college football.
It's happening, and you're right. Make week zero. But if the problem is if you make week zero a thing, then it really becomes week one. And why are you calling it week zero? Even though I think it's cool that you call it week zero because it does differentiate you from the other sports that you have this week zero concept. So you could make it a big deal. But then if you make it a big deal that it's too many games and it is week one and it's like it's not the unique thing that it is. So
this would be my argument. Now, a lot of this all stems from the congressional waiver that college football and the NFL have for TV scheduling. But I'm a big believer of now that we're making the seasons longer, like let's be real, a 12-team playoff, like yes, it's not longer for every team, but it's going to be longer for some teams. I think you should just make it week one and make sure everybody's got two byes. Like I do think if you're going to ask the players to play that many games, I think you got to give them the extra bye. It's the same thing as like with the NFL. If we're going to do the 18 game schedule, give them a second bye week.
And that doesn't seem complicated.
No, and to me, like, it's like okay, move it up.
But we're already extending the end of the season right now, up until almost when the Super Bowl used to be.
Correct.
With the playoffs, but I it's definitely doable. Obviously, there's sometimes more games than we have this week zero, but we do have some games of interest for sure with the game happening over there in Ireland.
We get an advanced scout game.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, see, hey,
exactly. It's even more interest for Tiger fans than usual. Typically, you'd be looking at the SMU game, but not this year.
Oh, no, you're not.
You're looking at the Florida State game.
Pretty much right now, like, other than the Florida State game, the only reason why you're watching these games is you probably have money on it, if we're being real. Or it's football and it's on. I guess there's that reality. So we'll start with what are we going to be talking about on Monday. Then Blake Topmeyer will join us like he does each and every Friday. We'll get his thoughts on the SEC and college football at large. We will get into the list at 3:05. Kevin, it turns out one of the officers that arrested Scottie Scheffler might not be like the world's greatest cop. So we'll discuss that and more. Then at 3:30, we are going to have the new 901 wrestling champion Shane Schaffner will join the program.
Sorry. Shane won. But then he lost it immediately.
Oh my goodness.
Shane is not the champion anymore. No, the new champion, Kevin Bless, the true one of one. So here's what happened.
What happened to McIntyre?
It sounds like it. Yes. So, yeah, we had. Yes.
Like, didn't it
happen to McIntyre?
Somebody like, yeah, he won the belt and then someone cashed in right on him, on top of him.
Yeah, Kevin Bless won the wild card. If you're a 901 wrestling fan, you know. If there's an interview, you've got to make sure to carve out time for it. It is a Kevin Bless interview. You never know what this guy is going to say. We're going to have him on live radio later. But he's
with the dump button.
The longest reigning 18-19 champion of all time, Kevin Bless, won the wild card rumble earlier in the summer, which guaranteed him a title shot at any champion anytime. He decided to take advantage of that opportunity last Saturday night. So Shane Schaffner made Bobby Ford, who you're very familiar with, Bobby Ford, the former 901 wrestling champion who was in studio here with the belt back in July. So Shane Schaffner made Bobby tap in just a grueling match, and then a few seconds later, Bless is out there. He plays his wild card, uses his opportunity now to claim any title anytime. He beat Shane Schaffner pretty quickly with a swanton bomb, 1-2-3. He's the new 901 wrestling champion as we move on to the new era of 901, closing out Black Lodge and looking ahead to the future.
So looking forward to having him in studio. He'll join us at 3:30. We'll tell your story, then we will get out of here. But I think let's start with what we always do on Fridays. What are we going to be talking about on Monday? And it seems to me what we're going to be talking about is it's game week, right?
It's college football. If we're not talking about these games, we're going to be talking about the next games because we're going to be ready.
Yeah, so. And it'll be the opening week for Tiger football. It'll be the opening week for everyone locally. I think that's a big part of the story. And Justin and I were talking about this a little bit, and I feel like it's a difficult season. Like, I don't love, like, Mark was a big narrative guy, and I think narrative's more of a sports writer thing than it is like a reality, and I get it. And football lends itself to narrative because there's fewer games, and it feels like you have game, week off, game. You know, so you can kind of craft a narrative a lot easier because of the rhythms of football. But I think it's kind of a difficult season to define for the Tigers from this perspective. It feels like it's a unique opportunity that the program has never had. Not only do you have access to the championship, the tournament, if you will, that you've never had before, you also have a team that lines up with the timeline of you have access to the championship, and now you have a team that is, on paper, good enough to compete for that spot. But it's now this weird reality of it's not as if the Tigers 100% control their own destiny. Like, yes, if they go undefeated, it is likely.
But they not guaranteed.
But it's not guaranteed because Boise State could go undefeated. There are other G5 teams that could go undefeated and get the spot instead of them. So you don't 100% control your own destiny. And then,
but never in the history of the program have you had a chance, theoretically, to win the national championship.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
And you do this year. And you happen to have a great team. And you happen to have a depleted conference, which is the advantage. I'm going to be the first guy to jump up and talk how terrible the schedule is for Tiger football this year. But it can work to your advantage in the fact that your conference has been shaken up and you won't have those forces on the schedule like an SMU or a Cincinnati that's going to throw you off and give you that loss when you don't need it.
And see, this is what I think.
That's a huge advantage.
This is what I think complicates it. So, if you go 9-3, all right, that likely means a loss to Florida State and losing probably.
Well, you don't deserve to be in the playoffs if you're going 9-3.
Correct. You're not going. I think that's because Liberty, at that point, Liberty can schedule their way basically to like 12-1 at worst.
We did a breakdown of the Tiger schedule earlier this week. I haven't really looked at Boise or at Liberty. Boise, I know they've got Oregon on the schedule. Be interested to see who Liberty is playing. But it's a great chance that either one of those two teams is going to have an undefeated or one loss record as well. Liberty, and that's what you're going to need.
Liberty's toughest game is likely to be they're playing at App State, but this isn't the App State that we've come to know. Like they're a diminished form of App State. So they're likely to roll through CUSA and they basically schedule their way to trying to go undefeated. And so if you're sitting at 9-3, I think that's where, like, Liberty... To me, there has to be, like, a two-game... Liberty's going to have what happened to them in the Fiesta Bowl held against them, but if they're sitting at 13-0 or 12-1 and the Mountain West or AAC champion is, 10-3, then I think they might get ahead that way. But this is kind of what I think the complicating factor is. Let's play out what 9-3 actually looks like. 9-3 means, all right, you probably lost of your games, you probably lost to Florida State, and you lost two of the three of UTSA, Tulane, USF. And I think at that point,
which is respectable, but it isn't for a program like Memphis, I guess, at this stage, right? That's fine. That's a fine record, but we now have the opportunity to go to the playoffs type of record.
Well, it's one of those things where historically 9-3 for Tiger football, that's nothing to sniff at. The complicating factor now is I get it. That history kind of matters because it sets a standard. But the key difference to me now is at no point in history has the Tiger football job been arguably the best job in the league. Like, it's always usually been a bad job in the league, and therefore we always kind of judge it against, what you're going up against. But that means you're now likely you will have been preseason favorite to win the league. And while 6-2 wouldn't eliminate you from playing for the conference title, it probably does, because what we've seen, and it's only a 1-year sample size, so it's still something to monitor, but I I suspect this is going to be the case. In this new version of the AAC, the good teams really separate themselves. Like last year, I believe it was the top four didn't lose to anyone other than themselves. And the bottom of the league, was really bad. And so because of that, we saw Tulane and SMU wind up in the championship game and with only a combined one conference loss, and that's because they lost earlier. Like, they lost to each other. One lost to, I think, Tulane. Maybe SMU beat them twice. Because I thought they played back-to-back. No, that's not true. No, what happened was UTSA played Tulane in the last week, and that was winner hosted the championship game against SMU. But they both... So Tulane and SMU got to the championship game with no conference losses. So while 6-2 right. doesn't necessarily eliminate you, there's a decent chance that you've probably been eliminated. And so now you're sitting here, what do we do with a season where on paper going, well, 9-3 is a successful Memphis football season. But is it? Like, I think it's kind of this weird reality of defining this season. I'm not sure it's, like, necessarily fair because, like, I do wonder, right. should it be conference championship or bust? Because I look at it from the perspective of what's the – like, I think if we get to 9-3 in another, like, mediocre bowl game, no conference championship, I think we're going to be right back where we were last year where everyone's like, so the Silverfield thing, like, what are we doing here? Like, it's clearly not a fireable offense, but it feels like that will be a big disappointment. Even if they win the league and they don't get the playoff berth, I still think everybody's going to sit there and go, that was a good year. Like, you'll sit there and go, damn, I wish Boise wasn't that good or whoever ends up, you know, taking that spot. But that's what I think makes the season difficult because this is a standard that we've never really had ever right. for Tiger because football.
It's the old basketball conference USA yes. standard now being applied to football.
Correct. 100%.
Which is like...
And you're not...
It's absurd when you think about it. I mean, we've seen... Yes, obviously we've had some great coaches here and some success in Memphis as of late in football. But for Memphis to be in a bad conference and have the best... team in football. It's just, it's absurd that the expectations that you have during John Calipari running through Conference USA is what we expect to happen, what should happen, but it's going to be hard to do.
Well, and I would also say the other key difference is, because I agree from the mechanics standpoint, it's that, but
they're the best team in the conference.
But to me, the key difference was like the Tiger basketball job like, while I make the argument the Tiger football job's right now the best job in the league, although I don't know, it might be Tulane. I think Tulane's a sneaky good job.
They have money.
They've decided they care about it. They built their own stadium.
But I mean, the Memphis job has both jobs have had success of coaches
correct.
Like bouncing.
Correct. So. They've both gone to Access Bowls. Like Tulane got the win, but they've accomplished similar results.
But Tulane has had, you know, they had the history. They've proven that they could be the best in the past, a long time ago.
Well, I mean, that's kind of
proven to be the best of the best and have some national success.
Well, and that's kind of, like, that was the other thing Justin and I were talking about. Like, it used to be, like, we're in this world where the Tulane game matters, but, like, we're still, guys our age are still conditioned. Like, that's, like, one of the games when even Tiger football is bad. It's like, well, at least we're not Tulane.
Right, yeah.
And
yeah.
so... It's you're not going to have
they had a long period of no season, but so did Memphis, but and maybe Tulane is back on track because it feels
I think they are. Like I think they made a good hire, and to me, like the other thing is 9-3. You can get away with like the 9-3, 10-2 season if you had a big win or two, like a day that everyone's like, yeah, we didn't get the job done, but man, that was like to me, it's the classic example is always. 10-2 Tennessee a couple years ago.
Right.
Like, yeah, that team did not make the playoff. Like, they have the South Carolina disappointment, and then Hooker gets hurt and whatnot. But, like, nobody's taken away that Alabama game from them. Like, and that is like just a you. So the problem though is you look at this schedule and you're like, well, what would be the game that you're like, all right, we went 9-3, but man, I'll never forget that Charlotte game. I'll never forget that Rice game. Like, and I think that's what's the complicating factor. So
there's not good, but because it. I guess you could be like not disappointed or upset at Silverfield. Obviously, if they lose one game and it's to the eventual conference champions, if it is Tulane or San Antonio, whoever it is that is going to win the conference, that's not going to be Memphis, if that's the case, and that's who they lost to, and it was a great team, and maybe that team makes the playoffs, then you can't, I don't think you could get upset about that. But to lose multiple games in this conference, in this year, when you do have, you got a lot of people believing.
And see, that's what makes this difficult, because from a historical context, saying win the league or bust as a standard, never really applied. But the more you talk it out, the more you realize, my big deal is, I don't feel like I owe anything to Ryan Silverfield other than you got to be fair. Like, to me, that's always been the thing. Like, that's the job. I don't owe him anything. He doesn't owe me anything, but be fair.
Right.
Is saying this team has to win the league a fair standard to judge them against?
If you want to have any, at this point in time in history, I don't know if, no, I don't think we have to say they have to win the league. To what? What's the punishment if they don't win? I guess is what they're not going to get the attention of the average Joe citizen in the Memphis area if they don't. They have to win the league if they want to get anybody's attention that anything is different. That hey, you can still have fun in this conference currently. That's what you got to do. Whether they do it this year or next year, they got to do that if they're ever going to get the people believing that, okay, this current status of Tiger football is worth my attention.
Yeah.
And that's what I think. That's what's on the line. If that's the stakes, they got to win that to have people believe that. Otherwise, you're working on trying to make that happen next year as well.
Yeah, so I guess the way that I look at it is, there's not going to be a punishment if they don't win the league. Like, he's not losing his job.
The punishment is
But to me, the punishment
is
you
want the you're not going to have the fanfare and the excitement.
I look at it this way. Fans inherently kind of know whether or not it was a successful season. You know what I mean? And sometimes it's hard to define. But I really do think if you don't make the conference title game at the minimum, unless Seth gets hurt or circumstances, if this team has the world's worst injury luck, that matters. But if we're just saying it plays out like a normal college football season, I just think that without that, I think the fan base is going to go right back to where they were, which was last year, which was kind of all right, he's fine. I think it will hurt momentum. Now, what does that matter? Does momentum matter as much in the NIL where recruiting has become more and more transactional? I guess I would say yes and no. Momentum matters because that's how you maximize everybody's buy-in. People are much, if you're winning and everybody believes in you, people are more willing to fork over money, which helps the roster, which whatnot. But if Memphis went 9-3 and they're sitting here still with the FedEx money, which is substantial enough to, the FedEx money alone maybe wouldn't make it the best job in the conference, but it makes it top two or three. And then you factor in a little bit more than that, and now you're where you are. But I just think that if they don't wind up at least in that championship game, everybody's just going to be sitting there looking we're in a crappy league and we can't win that. What are we doing here? And I think people will realize man, we got a lot of mileage out of an Iowa State bowl game. And again, that happened. I'm not taking it away from them, but you can start to talk yourself into maybe we put too much stock into that. Does that make sense?
No, it does. It's It's a schedule that's, as we've talked, okay, we're going
to, not the last time we're excited about.
We're not, it's not the last time we're going to say that. But that what's on the line is obviously the fan interest. And we're going to have, hopefully, the new stadium thing open next year. So that's going to easily give you a reboot and a refresh. So there's really not that much on the line. You're playing a little bit with house money. But the stakes, as far as if you can make it to that playoff, if you can make it to the playoff, I think that's going to be big on, like, for a while, it's going to be a very short list of teams who have made the playoffs, right? Because it is a short list currently today.
Yeah.
Very, very short list. And your name's going to be added to that list, and you can make the little graphic. These are teams that have made the college football playoffs in history. There's going to be something to that if you can make that game and lose like your Florida State versus Georgia in a bowl game, whatever. But you just got to get there. And I think that will help for the future. But, what about Monday? So we're talking about Monday. Do you think we've got this big game tomorrow? Florida State, Georgia Tech. Are Tiger fans talking on Monday? Like, could we see the game go down tomorrow that we'll have Tigers fans thinking, "Hey, we could win that one"?
I think it's possible, but that would mean this is kind of what I think would be complicated about that. If you're, would you rather see Florida State roll and look dominant tomorrow, or would you rather see them look vulnerable? Because
that's a great question.
To me, like, on the one hand,
you can spin either one in your in a positive manner for for yourself if you're a Tiger fan.
Like, if on the one hand, if they look dominant, well, maybe that makes you a little more fearful about having any hopes of that being a winnable game. If they look vulnerable, well, what happens, like, you know, that then it, maybe it's not like the feather in your cap. Like, in the end, you're probably watching Boise State the most this year in terms of, like, comparing yourself. And Boise's going to play Oregon. And so if kind of what ends up being the tiebreaker is whose performance against their Power 5 opponent, like, if that ends up being the tiebreaker, like, let's say Boise plays Oregon more competitively than Memphis does, and also Oregon goes on to win the Big Ten, is a playoff team, but Florida State finishes fourth in the ACC. Well,
you're saying like both. So Memphis goes undefeated except for the loss of Florida State.
Right.
Boise goes undefeated except for a loss against Oregon. So you got two teams with one loss outside the Power Five. And Boise's is against the great Oregon. Oregon's dominant, while Florida State is not. They're mediocre.
Like, let's say they're just, like, the fourth team in the ACC.
Right. Then it's going to go in Boise's direction.
Correct. That's, and again, we have no, like, they're,
but
we don't know
Florida State is beatable by this Tiger team.
Correct.
Now, then you could go undefeated, and Boise's not going undefeated, and then you're in.
Correct.
So, but of course, like, if Boise goes undefeated, they're also in. So Boise has the better opponent. Oregon's really going to have to disappoint, I would think. But I mean, Florida State's looking like a top 10 team as well. They're top 10.
Now you just touched on the chaos theory. Like, sometimes I do find myself rooting for chaos because it's just better content.
I love
13-0 conference champion Boise State with a win over Oregon.
Right.
13-0 Memphis AAC champions with a win over Florida State on the road. Both those wins would be on the road. How are you only putting one team in?
Exactly. And it's going to go to Boise.
Right.
Because we're tied into the team that got screwed last year. And we know guaranteed if Memphis ain't going in Florida State.
Well, here's the other thing I think that people aren't considering.
There are multiple at-large.
You get
it's possible.
Well, that's, but there's also,
and year one, I don't know.
I believe also the way that the bylaws are written is the top four conference champions that, based on the college football playoff rankings.
Right.
That is,
well, because they would be conference champions.
Right. So, and if the Big 12 goes the way that I think it does, which is multi-loss champion, I mean, we're talking about Boise
has Hawaii.
Yeah.
All right, Washington State on the schedule.
But it's entirely possible Boise and Memphis, if they're undefeated at 13-0 with wins over Florida State and Boise with a win over Oregon, It's entirely possible they're top five teams. So both...
It's possible.
Can you leave both out? Like, that's when it gets... Because also...
It's possible, but we're going to see so many of these other teams that are not in those ranked positions right now jump up from the SEC.
Correct.
Throughout the year.
And if they put both in, you better believe we're getting a new playoff format next year.
Right. So I don't think that... But is it a scenario that could happen? It could happen. And I hope we see...
It's not impossible. It's highly unlikely. All right, we've talked some Memphis football. Let's talk SEC football. We'll do that with Blake Topmeyer next, right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Follow me on Twitter at @BTopmeyer. Blake, I think I've explained to you how oftentimes there are news stories that I find annoy me because it feels like something gets sent out that's kind of press releasey, and everyone just makes it major news. The SEC tiebreakers fell into that category for me.
Well, I guess so. I mean, I do think that it could come into play because of the elimination of divisions. And, you know, I think, you know, in all likelihood, within the first 2 years here, we're going to see a scenario where the tiebreaker has to be enacted where there's no head-to-head. I mean, that was the beauty of divisions, is if there were ties in the division format, well, everybody in the division played each other, so usually a simple head-to-head, you know, was enough to break the tie. Whereas without divisions, you very well could end up with, you know, two teams that are 7-1 in the SEC. They didn't play head-to-head, and so the tiebreaker procedures are enacted. I mean, my real, I don't know if it's frustration because I don't frankly care that much, but whatever the word would be with the tiebreakers, I guess you'd call it frustration, is they just, the common fan's not going to be able to follow them. Like, once it gets past head-to-head, you know, you really have to dig in to the recesses of your mind to figure out how this six-part tiebreaker is going to work. So I think that's probably going to be the shortcoming for fans is, you know, if two teams end up tied and they didn't play each other in the regular season, fans aren't really going to know who won the division until, or who's headed to Atlanta until someone from the conference office tells them.
I have this theory. I'd be curious to know how you feel. I think we're going to quietly miss divisions. I think for so long everybody thought do away with divisions, like that makes sense, whatnot. I think we're going to find out that like people are like, I kind of miss the divisions.
I think we will about 3 or 4 years from now. Like once all the fan bases have kind of made the trips to Austin and Oklahoma, or, you know, even if you're not making the trips, you're seeing that game, the new teams in the conference, and then maybe the teams in the conference that, you know, you hadn't played in 7-8 years, you make that trip. So I think once that cycles through, I think you're right. Like the first couple years, I think people will feel like getting rid of divisions is a worthwhile trade-off to see some of those opponents that you haven't seen in forever, and to, you know, have an excuse to play Texas and Oklahoma, the newcomers. But I do think that that novelty is going to wear off, and particularly if, you know, some rivalries that fans consider are important are lost. I'm not talking about the headliners, obviously, but I think about a game like, say, LSU Ole Miss. I don't know if that one's going to be preserved long-term or not, but, you know, that's still a pretty good rivalry game. It's one of those sort of mid-tier rivalries, but, you know, if you go from playing that every year to playing that, you know, once every 3 years, or twice every 4 years, I guess it would be, I think fans are going to miss some games like that. So, yeah, I do think in the long run, there could be some longing for the old days of divisions.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously some of this I think would also get helped out. And inevitably, they go to 9 games, so you're gonna see teams more frequently. But, like, it was always kind of I understood when people would say they're going to eventually, with a 16 team or whatever, you know, 20, how many, they're going to go to an NFL style where, like, it's going to be division, you know, multiple divisions. And then I was like, well, so are they going to have, like, a
tournament to play the S? Like, are we going to have a four team? If there's four divisions, are we going to have each division champion then play like a semifinal before the championship game? Like, are we adding more and more games? And I just don't think that really works. And so I think what people are going to realize is, like, you kind of, we've realized, I think we realized it during the pandemic, how important like familiarity and the calendar is. I think people are going to get kind of frustrated. Like, I kind of miss, like you said, like, maybe I missed the Arkansas game. I missed the LSU game. Like, I think people are going to miss playing the people they played every year.
I think so too. And, you know, the other things that divisions taught us to do was to really care about the SEC championship game. I mean, they spawned at the same time. Divisions and the conference championship game went hand in hand. Used to be you had to have divisions to have a conference championship game. Now we know the rules have changed. You don't have to have that anymore. But the divisions taught us that the SEC championship game matters, and the reward for winning your division is the trip to Atlanta. And now I think with the elimination of divisions combined with the playoff going from 4 to 12, I just think that the SEC championship game is going to be devalued in the SEC. I mean, that's sort of the dirty little secret about the expanded playoff, is that for the SEC and the Big Ten, the conference championship is devalued. Now, I maintain it's not really devalued as much, if at all, for the ACC or Big 12, because in any given year, those leagues could be one, you know, two-bid leagues, and so, you know, winning the conference championship game could be the difference in getting into the playoff or not. So I think in those conferences, still pretty important to at least get to the conference championship game, have a shot at the playoff. But the SEC, you know, and I think we've talked about this before, an argument could be made that you're better positioned to finish third in the SEC than to finish second and go lose by 3 touchdowns and get run over in Atlanta in the SEC championship game. And you just never could have made that argument before in the smaller playoff with divisions. No one wanted to be left out of the conference championship game before, because it meant you didn't have a shot at the playoff unless your name was Alabama. Now, like I said, if you're like the third or fourth best team in the SEC, I think for the most part, you're kind of fine sitting at home. You get an extra week off.
Well, that's an interesting question, because I've kind of weighed this of, do we think the regular season's going to be devalued? Because to a certain degree, I mean, yeah, you're going to have mulligans. But I do also think, like, I'm kind of two minds. Like, I hate the people like, oh, it doesn't devalue it. See, like, you get those Twitter heroes. And it's like, no, it's devalued. Because it used to be when you lost a game, you're like, we're done. And like that devalues it. But where I do think the value picks up is that we are going to have more games in November now that are going to be relevant and feel like they matter. Because in the four-team era, I mean, I think it was very clear. Like, I think Rivalry Week really suffered during the four-team playoff era. I think now you're going to get the games in November that feel important back again.
I think it can be both devalued and more interesting at the same time. Let's take Tennessee as an example. Let's say Tennessee loses in week four at Oklahoma. Now, I think that's pretty crippling to Tennessee's playoff chances, but it doesn't eliminate them from the playoff. If they later beat, say, Alabama at home, finish 10-2, they could still make the playoff. In the old format, you lose to Oklahoma in week four on the road, you're probably toast. You're probably not making the playoff because you're not going to run the table and beat Alabama and Georgia and win the SEC championship game. Just wasn't happening. It would have been the equivalent of a playoff eliminator. Now it damages them, but they could still have hope going into October, November of making the playoff. So, yeah, it is devalued a little bit in the sense that, you know, every game doesn't matter maybe as much. Maybe no single game matters as much as it used to. But I do think, you know, there were teams before that by the end of the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season, you could just pack it up and say, well, season's over, boys. You know, we got 2 losses, not making the playoff. And if that was the goal, if that's your interest as a fan, was making the playoff, you could just kind of shut it down for the year. So I do think, you know, it will keep people in the fold. You know, even teams that are like long shot playoff teams, they could enter November still with a theoretical chance of making the playoffs. So I think it adds intrigue while at the same time devaluing the regular season. But I think the thing that has been devalued the most, even more than the regular season, are two conference championship games, like I was talking about. The SEC championship, the Big Ten championship, sure, if you're a fan, you still want your team to win that game, you want to get the first round bye, okay. But I think more than any other game, those two games have been devalued by the expansion of the playoff. And to me, it's worth it. Like, I can say that those games are devalued on the one hand, but also say it's totally worth it to me to go from 4 to 12-team playoffs and have to devalue the SEC and Big Ten championship game. It's a worthy sacrifice.
Jumping off of what you said, the devalue question, because Jeffrey, I think it devalues some of the games at the top with the elite of the elite, but like it gives value if you talk about the scenarios you talk about. If you lose a game early, you still have value in the rest of the schedule, while otherwise those games would not matter as much. Once you lose your game, the rest of your games don't matter as much because you know you have no shot. But the value is still there if you lose one game because you know you still have a shot, even if you lose one game.
That's why I think
there is some more increased value across the board for more teams. It's just at the top, the typical games, the stakes are not as high every single Saturday. I guess the stakes are not as high because you can lose and you can still compete. But every game has more value, I think, under the new structure.
I think that's why it's a complicated question. It's like, I think by the letter of the law, it's devalued. Because in the old system, more or less, when you lost a game, the competitive enterprise was over. But what you've done now is...
But now the rest of the games matter
correct.
More than...
I think you may have made more games net matter. Would you agree with that, Blake?
Yeah, I think it kind of comes back to what I was saying. Like, you can make the case that it's devalued while being more interesting at the same time. I don't think any one game, no single game, means as much as it used to. Because,
right.
You know, used to be, you were only afforded one loss, and if you lost twice... Unless there were some strange scenarios, you weren't getting into the playoffs. So, you know, that's where, like, the every game matter nature of it is a little bit lost now. I mean, I think most Power 4, I guess I shouldn't say Power 4, Super 2 league programs, you're in the Big Ten or the SEC, I think most of those programs have the idea, unstated largely, they're not saying it out loud, but they have the idea that if they go 10-2, they're going to make the playoff. Yeah, no single game carries the catastrophic weight that it used to, but it does keep more and more teams on the hook for longer. And then you bring into the fold all the Group of Five teams that, you know, other than one exception, Cincinnati, like they weren't making the 4-team playoff before. And now you're adding value to the season for teams like Memphis, for teams like Boise State and others in those conferences. That have a shot at the playoff. And, you know, before, I guess the end goal for those teams was to be in the New Year's Six game and play for a quality bowl win. But I do think it adds more value, the chance to go to a first-round playoff game and you know, try to upset one of the big dogs. So, yeah, I guess in sum, I don't think any individual game carries as much weight as it used to. However... the totality of the season probably matters more to some extent.
Like, the Memphis is the worst Memphis schedule in a long time, and it matters
maybe,
more than any other one, though. It matters.
Ever.
So yeah.
Like, yeah, it's both like...
Every game matters more.
It's
all big games.
Well, Blake, I've now started to decide, I think my favorite, if I'm going to be agent of chaos guy, I think the thing that would be hilarious, if Boise and Memphis both went 13-0, won their leagues, that means Boise would have a road win against Oregon and Memphis would have a road win against Florida State. What are they doing with those teams? Because that's probably is that two top five teams in terms of the, because they won't have lost. Like, that's where I think the ranking thing becomes fascinating, because we always leave out it's the top four, the highest ranked top four conference champions. Well, if we're right about the Big 12, that, you know, that's a multi-loss league, like, is that the team that's getting the bid? And then how does that factor in the G5? Like, if you put two G5 teams in the playoff this year, I guarantee you we will have a new playoff format next year. But I think that's kind of like the chaos theory that I've got.
Yeah, and it would be fascinating to see. I think what you would have there is, I still think the Power Four conferences would all get at least one bid. I get your point that, like, technically there's only five auto bids here, and so if you had two G5s with a worthy resume, does that leave one of the Power Four leagues outside looking in? I don't think so. I think all four Power Four leagues would still get their conference champion in. They might have to qualify one of them as an at-large, but I think all four Power Four leagues would get in. I think in the scenario you're laying out, I mean, I think the committee almost would have to come to heel and put two 13-0 group of five teams in. And I think then what you do is you basically subtract an at-large bid. I mean, technically, yeah, you would still have seven at-large bids, but you reallocate, for all intents and purposes, one of the at-larges to another conference champion, and you, in theory, subtract an at-large bid. And what that would probably mean is that the Big 12 and ACC are almost certainly one-bid leagues in that scenario, and the six remaining bids are divvied up between the SEC and the Big Ten. So, yeah, it would be... I mean, I don't think it's going to happen.
I want to be clear.
One of those is going to be half.
I think it's much more likely that both teams get beat by three scores in those games than they go undefeated. But they're playing. Like it can technically happen.
Right. And then playing out your scenario, if they both get crushed, I think the interesting decision the committee is going to have to make is, what if Liberty goes undefeated,
yeah,
in Conference USA, and Memphis is 12-1, Boise State is 12-1, and they both got crushed in their game against a Power Four opponent. Now, I think Liberty in that scenario should be left out in the cold. And I know the theory is that the previous season is not supposed to affect the selection of the future season. Well, I don't think that's true. I don't think that's even possible to be true. Your subconscious is a thing that exists. And I think those committee members are going to remember that when Liberty got to play Oregon in the New Year's Six Bowl last year, they got embarrassed. They lost 45-6. And so I don't care if Liberty goes 13-0 cruising through a cupcake schedule. Even if Boise State gets blown out by Oregon and goes 12-1, or Memphis gets blown out by Florida State and goes 12-1, I think either team would have a stronger resume than the 13-0 Liberty that played no one, because you want to be considered for the playoff, you should go out and schedule a Power Four opponent and let the chips fall where they may. If you lose, you lose. Go win all the rest of your games. At least you put yourself on the line against a Power Four team.
An interesting fact in this scenario, so Liberty and Memphis do have a shared opponent. They're both playing Middle Tennessee, so that game means even more now for the Tigers.
Yeah, like, you want to go out. Everyone had that game circled.
Well, but now you do. Now it means something. Like, you've got to go out and you got to beat the devil out of them. You got to put some points on the board, because if it does come down to that scenario, you got to show that, hey, we beat this shared opponent by a lot more points than Liberty.
Well, I think the other thing, Blake, because I agree with you, the only thing the committee has to do is not publicly admit that what happened last year changes their opinion. That's all that they have to do. I think what's more fascinating is, what is the spread going to be? Like, how many fewer losses does Liberty have to end up being that team? Because I agree with you. If they're undefeated and the Mountain West or the AAC champion only has one loss, that team, those two teams are getting in over them. I do wonder, though, what if it's 13-0 Liberty and 11-2 or 10-3. Like, what would they do with that situation? It feels like at least it'd have to be 11-2. Because I think if they're 10-3, they'd put them in.
I think 13-0 Liberty would probably get in over an 11-2 Mountain West champion or AAC champion. And the other thing, if it comes down to Boise or Memphis, let's say they both lose their Power Four games, they both go 12-1. I'm interested to see how much weight the committee puts on Boise playing Washington State and Oregon State. I mean, you know, the Pac-12 crumbled. However, when you hear those schools, you think Pac-12 schools. And so I think, you know, if it comes down to Memphis and Boise State having the same record, and that bid comes down to those two teams, I think Boise State's going to get the nod because of the subconscious idea that, oh, hey, they played Washington State and Oregon State. Those used to be Power 5 teams. And I think a lot of people still look at them that way, even though they're in the Pac-2 and the Pac-12 no longer exists and the Power 5 is now a Power 4. I think Boise State gets a little bit of advantage on their schedule if their record is identical to Memphis. I mean, Memphis's most realistic playoff scenario, which I think very well could happen. I picked them as my group of five team. I think they're going to make the playoff. I think they're the best bet from the group of five. Their most realistic scenario is they lose to Florida State, but don't get embarrassed.
Yep.
They beat everybody else on the schedule, and Boise State loses a second game somewhere. They lose to Oregon and somebody else. Maybe it's Washington State. Maybe it's Oregon State. Maybe it's a game in the Mountain West. I think that's the best path for Memphis. And I think if that played out, Boise State's 11-2, Memphis is 12-1. Even if Liberty's 13-0, I think Memphis is getting the nod.
That seems fair. Those Pac-2 teams can either make it or break it for Memphis. They're going to beat Boise and help Memphis get in, or Boise will beat them and help Boise get in.
Yep, I think that's right. I mean, those are two critical swing games for Boise State that can bump them above any other group of five team, I think, that has an equal record.
All right. Lastly, former Gannett brethren, John Talty, now is at 24. Is he at 247 CBS? Right. I think he's at 247.
They're one and the same.
I totally missed the idea of the guy that I used to make fart jokes with in the press box at Ole Miss, writing a book with Armin Katayan. I got to say, though, right now, the excerpts that we're getting, this might be the closest I come to buying a book and reading it.
Yeah, we've seen the excerpts. We've seen one from Harbaugh. And the juicy one that was released to AL.com this week about the dust-up between Saban and Kiffin and how much Kiffin got under. I mean, we all knew Kiffin Lane got under Saban's skin, but to have some insight there, it seems like maybe Jimmy Sexton is offering a little insight. Just reading in between the lines there. And Sexton is somebody that knows both people well as the agent for both Nick and Lane. Like that, of the different excerpts I've seen and different things that have been teased being in the book, I don't know that the relationship between Nick and Lane will be the most important thing discussed in the book, but it might be the most interesting because you just think about two polar opposites. And we've all kind of known on some level that was sort of a rocky relationship while those two worked with each other. I do think there's some mutual respect there. I mean, I think it goes so far, probably, particularly as Nick views Lane. I think his respect only goes so far. But I do think there's some mutual respect, certainly. But you can respect someone and have had a very difficult time working with that person. And I think that was the case between Nick and Lane. And just based on this excerpt that we've seen, that was released to AL.com. Sounds like that's going to be explored here.
It was funny to relive. I totally had forgotten that Kiffin, after getting the FAU job, coached the semifinal and got told to leave after the
fired. Yeah.
That one was great. And then also the most Lane Kiffin move ever, when he called Jimmy before a game trying to get asking about a job, and Jimmy's like, "You're playing in 2 hours. Let's go win the game." Call it about another job right off the bat. It's like, that's my boy. That sounds like Kiffin.
At the end of the day, Lane is still Lane. I keep saying, whenever people ask me about him, it's like, I think this is a different guy than the guy who coached the Vols. But he can be a bit of...
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.